Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 367 of Longbox Heroes. Joe and Todd joining you here. How are we doing, Todd?
I'm doing good. I'm rested and well and ready to go.
We're glad to have you back. Returned safe and sound, mostly in one piece, from New York Comic Con this past weekend.
Yep, only have one or two dings left, and I'm fine.
And I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot of that throughout the course of the show, but I'm just glad you're back, and I'm glad we're back on time as well.
That's right. Keep that schedule.
So we have a bunch of stuff to talk about here this week on the show, as well as not only Todd's stories from New York Comic Con, but also Todd interviews from New York Comic Con.
What?
That's right. Todd had an opportunity to sit down and speak with at least one comic book creator.
What?
More than one, less than three.
Wow. I wonder how many that could be.
As well as, you know, the usual news and digital sales and freebies. What we read this past week, which was Harley and Ivy meet Betty and Veronica and Batman White Knigget. Also what we're looking forward to coming out this week. As well as tons of Todd's Art Attack stuff, I'm sure, after New York Comic Con fallout. And Todd and Joe have issues as we're going to be talking about Gotham Central number 12.
Yes.
If I popped you and I was talking over the joke there, I apologize.
No, I was laughing at the Knigget thing.
There you go.
I love Knigget, the word Knigget.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know, that was in a Monty Python thing.
Yes, yes. I'm a big fan of that.
A little known Monty Python project.
Right. Oh, my goodness. It's no Time Bandits.
No, it is no Time Bandits.
Right. Which is Monty Python adjacent.
Yes, as everything should be.
I've gotten a lot of something-something adjacents the last couple days.
I started a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know Spectrox is a thing and adjacent is a thing. You know what? Put that on my tombstone. I created Spectrox adjacent and just here lies Todd.
He made Spectrox famous.
That's right.
Who's a guy who made a thing famous? Let me think. You're like the Pablo Escobar of Spectrox. Just a random famous person.
Yes, I am the Pablo Escobar of Spectrox.
Yes.
If you did Spectrox in the 80s, there was a 90% chance it was mine.
Oh my goodness, turn the page in our script. So
right.
So there was a bunch of news that came out from New York, but none of it like stuck with me, which is weird, you know? I noted it and then I came back to it and I'm like, I don't know if I really care about this anymore.
Wow.
But there were go ahead.
So I was going to say, see, because I was heavily relying on you for news.
Uh-oh.
from New York. No, seriously. Do you know how hard it is to do stuff at the con and try to keep track of all the news that's coming out?
Right.
It's very tough. So I was like, oh, I'll come back and Joe will have this completely under control.
Right. But no, you know, this is the first time it feels in a long time that there was a convention that, A, was not only comic heavy, but it seemed as though all the publishers had a very heavy presence there.
Yes, they did.
Which was really good in that regard. Oh, you know what? And this is, so one of the DC things, of course, it's a lot of the new books that are spitting out of what's coming after Metal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was the one team book that Lemire was doing. It's a lot of Lemire news. And it's the fact that the Tom Strong characters are going to be in that book.
Right.
And I think that's a pretty big deal.
It is. I thought Alan Moore owned those. Wasn't Tom Strong Alan Moore?
Well, yes. So I guess what it was when he did the ABC, the America's Best Comics books.
Right.
When that was part of Wildstorm, before DC purchased Wildstorm.
Right.
He was very clear in the knowledge that it was work for hire work.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Now, granted, after the fact, when his work for hire became purchased by the company that he hates very much, that's when things, kind of changed. But with these characters coming back, the America's Best Comics characters, I could only hope we get a return of the top 10 verse.
Hill Street Blues meets superheroes. Mm-hmm. That was a good book.
Write that down.
Okay.
Write down top 10.
Top 10. Or Hill Street Blues?
Nah, not Hill Street Blues.
All right.
But one of the other Lemire announcements, and this is one of those ones where over the course of the weekend, he would just, without context or without anything else, tweet out a picture from one of the DC Who's Who of the Inferior Five.
Mm-hmm.
So he would send it out once, then he sent it out a second time, then he sent it out a third time, and I'm like, okay, something's up. And the next day, they announced that he, along with Keith Giffen, were going to be doing an Inferior Five book that was going to have a Peacemaker backup series, and it actually takes place right after Invasion. You know, and like so far outside of what DC is doing.
Right.
And I don't think I've been more excited for a DC project in I don't know how long.
First of all, Invasion is one of the greatest DC like mini crossover things ever. I was a big sucker for Invaders. Invasion. I remember like all the stuff that came out of that. And then apparently, like you said, I'm hoping that the book, because it's going to take place after Invasion, and the way they make it sound is like it's going to still be the 80s kind of a thing.
Right.
So if that's the way it is, oh my God, I can't wait. I'm like, this will be fantastic. Like with it, like I would want guest stars of 80s, like the 80s version of characters to show up. And, oh, I put me down for 2, 3, 4 copies. I'm good.
Right. And this is one of those ones where I think they said it's coming out in March. And this is just like, it just went right on the list. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Mm-hmm. I really dig the premise. And I was reading an article, too, about it. It was like, I remember when they were trying to do an Inferior Five book at Vertigo. And it, like the rumor was that they wouldn't do it because DC didn't want to put a book out with Inferior in the title because it wouldn't look good,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. But it, like back then, it would have been a parody of how books have gotten grim and gritty. So that like there's a lot of stuff you could do with the Inferior Five.
And no better. It's good to see Lemire doing so much more stuff at mm-hmm. DC. I know right. We talked about it before when the Forge was announced, like all these new, you know, not creator-owned things, but like projects that the creators were going to get a piece of.
Right.
I don't remember the exact wording of it, but it was like one of those things where it's work for hire sort of stuff, but you're still going to get a little bit of the back end as opposed to nothing of the back end if these things take off.
Right. You're entitled to a percentage, a small percentage, but a percentage nonetheless.
Right. A small percentage is still better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So one of the other books, one of the other announcements that kind of came and went, literally, at New York Comic Con, was Marvel announced that they were going to be doing a promotional comic with Northrop Grumman. Now I'm thinking to myself, are those the guys that did that Superboy run back in the 90s after the Reign of Superman? No.
That was Tom Grumman, right? Oh,
that's right. They are the 6th largest war profiteer in the United States.
Right.
With a piddling $25.2 billion in sales from 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So Marvel was going to be doing a crossover with them, kind of like a promotional comic with them.
Right.
And they were going to be doing like a panel on Saturday and all this other stuff. And Todd, would you be surprised that in today's political climate, people went out of their minds over it.
See, what I would have liked to have seen was Norbert Grummet or whatever their name is, like, do a Tony Stark in the middle of the panel and realize that what they were doing is wrong, mm-hmm. and they were going to build armor for people to fight supervillains. Right. Then you got yourself a panel.
Oh, boy. So this thing was announced, debuted, and scrapped in less than 12 hours. I guess that's one of the positives of today's 24-hour news cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this seems like an out-of-the-box fumble on Marvel's part. I'm sure their hearts were in the right place. You know, I remember a time, you know, back in the late 90s, even pre-9/11, you would see commercials for the Marines and the different branches of the armed service in Marvel Comics and DC Comics and just in comics in general.
Right.
Don't
you think this is slightly different, though?
This is a little bit different, but okay. It's like, you know, it's apples and oranges, but at least we're talking about fruit, you know?
Right. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to go way out on the limb here, Joe, and have a provocative opinion.
Okay.
I really wouldn't have cared if they did the comic and had the panel. Like, in the morning, I don't know. Do you know what I didn't, you know what company I didn't know about until you just mentioned it?
Are you saying that this was an elaborate ruse by Northrop and Tom Grummet to make themselves more publicly conscious by aligning themselves with Marvel/Disney, mm-hmm. knowing that there would be an outcry that would get the event and panel and book canceled, but still get their name some publicity for free?
Listen, they're trying to be the number three war profiteering
right.
profiters in the world.
That's
so, no, I don't know, don't care, but honestly, if they had done the comic and the panel, no one really would have went to it or cared. There's so many other bigger things. Like, I would figure that would be an empty hall. Honest to God. Because who would go see it? It's like Cup of Joe over here. You know, Doomsday Clock over here. Here, you know, over here is Valiant's Quantum and Woody. Over here is this. And it's like, oh, well, here's, you know, this team of war profiteers to team up with. It would just get so little traction. But now, we're talking about it. So, I don't know. I find it amusing that when sometimes people go out of their way to stop things, they make it bigger than it ever would have been.
I tend to agree, but I brought it up only because the quickness at which this went away.
Like, yes, I will give the ability, the nod to the social media and the news cycle to just go, oh, we planned it. Oh, it's a mistake. Oh, it's gone. What's next?
Right. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was a football coach who did something stupid. Let's move on.
So that's really all that I remember from the news, Todd. But I wasn't at the floor. I wasn't at ground zero, if you will, of New York Comic Con. Mm-hmm. I got a couple questions for you. And then any fun stories or fun whatevers that you might have that you want to share with us. You had tweeted out a picture of, and then again, listen. It pains me to even say this, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
A DC Doomsday Clock pin. But you're like, oh, I didn't go to the panel, but I got this.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, somebody.
How many people did you mug to get one?
Well, they gave those away at the Doomsday panel, and they gave away Doomsday Clock ash can that was 5 or 6 pages. That I didn't get, but there's somebody we know that works for DC.
Oh, okay.
And while he was getting his information of what day he had to do maybe some, you know, business at the local DC booth and greet the fans, they paid him in a Doomsday pin. And Tom was, and Tom, not even knowing the whole pin sticker thing, went, I bet Todd would really like this. And I was like, you got it right, big guy. Was it a doomsday clock sticker? Patooey. No, it was a pin. So yeah, that was cool. And actually, it's a really cool pin. It looks really nice. I like the whole Superman emblem on it and everything of the Watchman clock. I have to admit, when I saw it, I was like, all right, that's really, really cool. And it's funny because one of our friends, Josh, went to the panel and got the pin and was rubbing it in my face. And then he came, he's like, you can take a picture of it. Hey, Josh, by the way, I know you're listening because there's going to be a couple stories about you today. He was like, oh, I got this. And then later he was like, you can take a picture and this and that and use it. And then I got mine. I was like, I don't need any of the pictures of yours. I got my own. I'm like, I'm using those. And I didn't have to wait around. Though he did get the ash can, and I think they were going for 100 the day that it happened. I think they're going at about 50 now, which is ridiculous. But anyway.
Oh, so okay. So again, there's going to be a lot of New York Comic Con talk here, of course. So I do want to apologize. I know you were graciously offering your services to attempt to get some of the con exclusives for random folks, myself included.
Right.
How did all that go?
One friend asked me to get him a Dengar pop. I could not get it. It was a shared exclusive like the First Doctor one was that I wanted, but luckily the First Doctor one was shared with Books a Million, which is literally 3 minutes from my house. So when Josh told me that I could get it from Books a Million, I went up on the Wednesday, even before the con opened, and they had one. So I was able to pay my, it was, Funkos are $11-ish, like from a store. This was an exclusive, a con, like exclusive. So they were asking 14 or something like that. I was like, sold. What?
I said, oh my goodness, that $3 markup, that's how they get you.
Right, it might even been like $5. I'm like, I don't care, whatever, I'm buying it. But when I went for the Funko, the Funko booth, it was a line around the booth and down the hall. It was like if you wanted something, you were going to wait hours. And then on top of that, early on when you signed up for your ticket, like when you fan registered, you got like a link that said, oh, because you're fan registered, you can join these lotteries. And the lotteries were like, oh, if like signings and greetings and like exclusives. And the signing and greetings were like, oh, like on Thursday, you can meet Todd McFarlane and get something signed, or this or that. And I'm trying to remember some of them off the top of my head. One of them was the Evil Dead panel. Ash versus Evil Dead, which the whole cast was going to be there, and they'd all sign something for you. I signed up for a couple of them that would be interesting if I won them for friends. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because there was nothing that was like, oh, a Doctor Who panel or a DC, like, something that I was, like, really interested in. But there was like, oh, like an Ash versus Evil Dead. I was like, oh, if I win, I'll go. I'll get this everything signed. So whatever they're giving you to get signed, and I'll give it to Matt or you or, you know what I mean? Like, people who appreciate Evil Dead way more than me. But the two exclusives that they were giving away was a first shot at the Lego stuff in the morning and the first shot at Funko stuff. So even before the people who lined up and got there early, there was the people who signed up online weeks before for the Funko lottery, and anyone could have done it, that they got their shot first right in the morning. So it was chaos at the Funko booth.
Well, it doesn't sound like there was a ton of griping and grousing online this year.
No, because I think people knew going in what you were going to get and not get. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's pretty much established now. Unless you're a new con goer. Like, maybe if you went, Joe, and you didn't know, you're like, oh, I'm going to go get a Funko, and you walk over to the booth, like, and I hadn't talked to you, you may be shocked. But if you've gone to the con a few times in the past couple of years, you know what you're getting near and what you're not getting.
Right.
Another question?
I don't know. Any other cool stories from the floor of the con? Any, did any listeners find you?
Only two that were wrestling fans, and I believe they know you were the only two people that ran into me that I knew.
They are wrestlers, not just wrestling. Well, they are wrestling fans, of course. If you're a wrestler, typically you're a fan of the product, as it were.
Then I had it right. So.
Yes. But, Matt Turner and Andy Hedder, I know longtime listeners of the show, also the current Grand Slam Wrestling tag team champions, the promotion locally around these parts.
Oh, if they had told me they were tag team champions, I would have got my picture taken with them. I only get picture taken with champions, Joe.
Right. So. Or people with sparkly jackets.
Oh, all day long, Joe, all day long. But and they came and they hassled Tom Durenick for a sketch. So.
Oh, that's cool.
I forget what they got, but maybe they'll art attack it. No, maybe they did. We'll get to that later.
Right.
Let's see. The other thing that I was trying to get was your stupid points.
Oh yeah, yeah, my stupid points.
He wanted 50,000 points, and I only got you 20,000 points.
Well, okay, so it's difficult to explain because. We were conversing through text, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Marvel has this like insiders program,
right?
Where you do a bunch of things, right? Mm-hmm. Join, rack up the points, and get cool stuff. Allegedly, right?
Right.
All of this is allegedly. Let me. Log in here. So, because Marvel had like a dedicated presence at New York Comic Con this year, they had a whole bunch of different things that you could do, and you could trade them in for, you know, like digital comic redeems. It's crazy. Like the point structure, it's essentially like what's the cigarettes where you can get a canoe?
Yeah. Oh.
Camel points or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Marlboro dollars or whatever.
Right, right, right. So there's a bunch of different ones that you can get, and they're like piddling ones. It's like they did a trivia through their Twitter, and it's every day that gets you 1,000. If you just click this link that says, I am aware that Old Man Hawkeye's a book that's coming, you get 250 points, right? You following me?
Yeah.
Like, and when you redeem a digital code, you get 200 points, just to give you an idea, right, of how these things right. work. Then they did a whole bunch of, like, panel-specific ones.
Okay.
Where if you went to the panel, you got 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was one that was a scavenger hunt, which is the one that you sent me, which was 20,000. And then there's another one that gives you no other information. It just says, New York Comic Con code redeem, 50,000 points. And then it says, enter your code. Does not give you any other information of what you need to do or how you get it or any of that other stuff. So I'm just like, I don't know, sniff around the booth, see if they have something.
And I did, and they kept taking me to that 20,000 points.
Right, and I did redeem the 20,000 one. Thank you very much.
And there's the funny with that, because when I went to the first booth, and the first booth was right there, and they gave you the first code word. And then the second booth was only 8 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked over to that one, and I'm like, excuse me, I don't know where I have to go to get the second code word. And she's like, oh, you're in the right place. And I'm like, and she's like, M. And I'm like, I don't even know what I have to do with this. And she's like playing with me. And in the end, the second word was, first she said Mary, like that was the first word on the thing, and I'm like, Todd? Like, I thought she was telling her name was Mary. I'm like, I don't know. But she's trying to hint that I have to figure out the one word leads into another, and I'm like, it's the morning, it's the second day of the con, I'm tired. Just
your
give
name
me the second.
Is Homer what? Thompson. I got you.
Right, just give me the second word. So then I figured it out, and I went around and I got the rest of the words, and I got you 20,000 points. I got you 20,000 points, and my favorite part of 20,000 points was, thanks, where's the 50,000 points?
Well, again, it was like, difficult for me to explain this through text is all.
Right, I get it. And then I was like, could you just send me the link? And you're like, it's down right now. And then that's the last I heard of
it. Yeah, the site was down because I guess everyone was trying to hit it. because mm-hmm. right at that time was whenever the first panel they were doing was.
Mm-hmm.
And the scheme with the panel was they were approximating how many people could fit in one of the rooms.
Right.
So they're like, not everyone's going to redeem it, so the code's good for the first 100 people.
Okay.
So then people who aren't using it are putting the code up online.
Mm-hmm.
So in a panel room that might have had 400 people, where they're expecting 100 people to try to hit it, 400 people are tweeting it out, so thousands of people are trying to hit it at the same time. So it was nice. A disaster.
So while all this is going on, it's also very hot. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't know if the Javits knew it was an 80-degree day with high humidity. So, and then that was really bad. But then, have you ever been in the Javits, Joe?
Yes.
You come in at street level, let's say, and then you could go up to the main floor, which was where all the booths and shows and like all the stuff that you could see and buy stuff and dealers and stuff like that. And then you went downstairs. And downstairs was Artist Alley, and then over one was, say, autographs, and then over was picture opportunities. I don't even know what was over there. But downstairs, it was so hot. That was the one thing that I will say is that I heard a lot of artists complaining, and I saw a few on Twitter who said they may never go back because it was like the bowels of Satan's apartment in there. It was bad. And the second day, I wasn't there for Thursday. But Thursday, everybody said it was even worse. And when I got there on Friday morning, I heard like the handler saying, because we were able to get into the con 2 hours early to set up and everything. They're like, we have the air conditioning on full and we're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. That was a big complaint that I will have to say because, and I think it didn't help that they're remodeling the Javits Center. And they had part of the Javits torn down and it was compressed space and it was very packed. But I will say, I think with the one-day passes, which a lot of people have complained about, that there was more people, and everybody that I talked to seemed to say they were doing brisk business because they believe that a lot of people only get one pass. Like the whole thing that we've talked about on the show before is that they only get one pass. They're only there one day. So instead of taking their $500 that they have to spend and dribs and drabs over 4 days, they're blowing most of the $500 they have in one day. So you have different people doing that, more money is being spent.
Well, I guess that's a good thing in the grand scheme of things, right?
I would say so. I would say so. I'm trying to think. I got to ride a fake dragon. That was fun.
So what was that, a promotion in, I guess, they're like, oh, it's Comic-Con, people like comics, people like dragons, enjoy.
There was a lot of video game stuff, and I'm looking now to see, it was from Warner Brothers, there was a Middle-Earth Shadows of War game that was there, and I was walking by, and basically, I have to post it up later, that there was they make a GIF of you, they tell you to do four poses. And it's this an ad for the game. And I was in it. And the best part about it was they had these two guys dressed as these tall ogres. And they were just being goofy by the booth. And they were taking pictures with everybody. And I, when I got to the dragon and sat on it, he joined me for mine. Because he just liked when I was talking to him and like, no, that wasn't their job. And he's like, oh, I'm coming over with this guy. And they were really good because they had those like big booming, like medieval, war, you know, battle voices. They're like, oh, and they would take, pictures with you. Like, oh, you have the tiny magic box. Yes, I will take a magic tiny box, painting with you. And then they'd be like, oh, I like your haircut. And it would be like a bald guy and stuff like that they're talking to. And they were absolutely hysterical. But they suckered me in, and the line was moving pretty fast. But you got to sit on the – they said it was a drake. To me, it's a dragon. And I just liked it because it was a really cool, like full-scale thing that they had that you climbed up on and sat. And I'm like, I can deal with this. It was fun.
So, one of the other fun things that you got to do, Todd, was yes. interview the writer of the upcoming Quantum and Woody series from Valiant Comics.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Daniel Kibblesmith. So, let's go to that interview right now.
And I'm here with Daniel Kibble-Smith, the new writer of Quantum and Woody. He was also the writer of...
I'm a writer on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
And so I'm guessing this is spinning out of the Asmus run, where the goat is his father and all that, but this is your take on it?
Exactly. I mean, it's a new jumping on point for new readers, so if you've never picked up Quantum and Woody before, this is a great place to start. But I also am a huge fan of the James Asmus run. And it's those same Quantum and Woody, the goats, all the characters that you know already, and we're jumping forward a little bit in time, to a time when Quantum and Woody are estranged from each other. And this first arc is all about what happened, what caused them to finally break up, to the extent that they can break up, considering their their situation.
Strife between Quantum and Woody? That's completely unheard of. No, that's really cool. I mean, that goes all the way back to the Christopher Priest run, which I'm a big fan. We really push the book on the show every time it comes out. Is there anything you could tell us that would be coming up that would be super cool?
Absolutely. I mean, we've always seen, like you're saying, we've always seen Strife from Quantum and Woody, but we're trying to take it to another level. This is Quantum and Woody where they're not even on speaking terms. Woody shows up on Eric's doorstep every morning, clangs, and walks away. And they're not in each other's lives except to do that one necessary act to keep them both from disappearing.
Right, because they disintegrate if they don't do it at once every 24 hours or something
hours,
like
exactly.
that, which is a great storytelling point where you have two people who hate each other, but they're necessary. We have to meet, and like I said, I can't wait to find out like the backstory. You're going to tell flashbacks or just like...
Well, it wouldn't be Quantum and Woody without flashbacks.
That's what I was going to say.
Woody always has flashbacks.
And who is the artist on the book?
The artist is Kano, and it is amazing. It is just next level stuff. Like, I was such a fan of, he's drawn the characters before, and in particular, I love the delinquents.
Right, yes.
Where he also, you know, drew them hanging out with Archer and Armstrong.
Right.
And the compositions and the experimental stuff that he's doing is just off the charts. I've never seen anything like it. I feel so lucky that I get to write this book.
Right. Now, working with him, now, do you write gags for him? Does he, like, throw his own in? Do you work together as a collaboration? Or how does that work?
We're kicking drafts back and forth through the editor. So I obviously write gags because, you know, I come from the world of comedy, and Quantum and Woody are superheroes who are also always in a very funny book. He also, on top of the scripts, just makes it so rich. And, yeah, he'll load it with expressions and background details, and just brings, yeah, he brings a lot of his own humor to it. So if there's something that, you know, I need for story reasons, it's obviously in the script, but with somebody that talented, it's just get out of his way, man.
Exactly. Now, what is the difference? Is there a big difference between writing for, like, I guess, like a live TV show, a TV show, and, you know, the printed page with illustrations, everything? Is it much different?
Sure. Well, the biggest difference is that Quantum and Woody is a character-driven book. I mean, you know, all narrative is going to be a little bit different, because the humor in Quantum and Woody is going to come from how consistent their personalities are. Like, you kind of, if you know the characters, you know that you can... Put Quantum in a situation and he'll react this way, and put Woody in a situation and he'll react the totally opposite way, and bouncing off of each other, obviously. So it comes from just who they are as people and the details of the adventure that they're on. Writing for late nights, you know, it's more observational, it's political, it's
current.
Very current, yeah, day of current.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not really a narrative. If it is, you know, we're sort of the protagonists. It's like checking in with ourselves and our country and just trying to get some catharsis about what's going on in the news, explaining it to people, and helping it go down a little smoother.
So you're saying that maybe Quantum and Woody won't be getting as deep politically? And, I'm just joking, you know, like...
Well, not right away, but they do live in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So, and Quantum and Woody has always been a book with a lot of satire in it. So this first arc is just about the brothers, their relationship, and the adventure that they're going on. But in the future, I mean, who knows? Because it's got to reflect the world that it's happening in.
And it has a rich history of Quantum and Woody being both black and white, and the Christopher Priest run and all that. So I could see, you know, if you did that down the line. now, one of the most fascinating things that I see is like the big push from Valiant with things coming, like you have the bundles and the variant covers. The gimmick cover is one of my favorite things that I just have to mention because I want to get one of those in the worst way.
It's so crazy, man.
Now, like, do you have like any say, like do you pitch ideas, like crazy things to promote the book?
I mean, I think that's mostly our boss. You know, I think that's Dinesh. So like, it's they've been going on hunts to find the actual foil that was used in the 90s, and then there's gimmicks on top of gimmicks, like holofoil, incandescent ink, maybe.
I think it's a die cut where the goat bit it.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's every one that you remember from the 90s, and maybe a few that you don't.
Onto one variant cover, the most variant cover of all time, we're calling it.
Right,
so,
right.
I think you get a sticker with a fourth additional Valiant hero, and that's going to be random.
Yes.
So I'm a big, you know, I grew up in the 90s reading comics, and I was a sucker for that stuff then, and I love coming back to it with a lot of nostalgia and reference, and, you know, we joke a lot about that kind of stuff. But it also worked, and it really, like, crackled with a lot of energy and a lot of life that at the time people were really invested in and really cared about. So I hope we can tap into that same energy and give people that same little leap in their heart when they see something over the top like that.
Yeah, like I said, I absolutely laughed out loud when I saw it, and I get the joke. I totally get the joke in a world where people were harping on variants and this and stuff and gimmicks, and it's like, well, here's something hysterical, and I'm like, that's well worth it. You know what I mean? So
it's like we're going all the way through it and coming back out the other side.
Yes,
and it's totally cool again.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the book, and I would like to thank you for the interview.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Long Box Heroes with Daniel Kibblesmith, writer of Quantum and Woody.
Wow. Again, I want to thank Valiant for giving you the opportunity to get a chance to talk with Mr. Kibblesmith, but I'm excited for the book. If I wasn't excited before, getting a little bit more information. I don't think a lot of that stuff's been in the solicitations.
I don't think so either. He was very forthcoming, and he was a wonderful guy to chat with, and I want to thank Valiant, too, for giving me the opportunity.
Right, and again, obviously, we'll get to the other interview a little bit later on, but I also want to mention, in a very strange turn of events, there are no conventions this weekend.
I wonder if everybody's, like, burnt out this week or something from something.
I don't know what's going on. I would assume they would have maybe taken the following week off, or, like, not... Like, maybe, like, 2 weeks from now, like, whatever the week of Halloween is.
Mm-hmm. For free Halloween comic book day?
Well, yes and no, but, you know, everybody kind of trick-or-treats on the weekend, and Halloween's on, like, a Tuesday this year, which is, you know, always strange when it's in the middle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no conventions this week, but still check out the show notes for, you know, some of the other stuff, of course, that we'll include in here. And, of course, that's going to be links to soon-to-be-named-network.com at soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, which includes this show, of course, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Paladins of Voltron is back, AIM Downsides podcast, and just as equally, no more or no less than anyone else, Podvocacy. So my mentioning of Podvocacy on last week's episode of this show was edited and altered on this past week's episode of Podvocacy.
Okay.
And my voice, my audio recording, cannot be duplicated, reproduced, or altered without my expressed written consent and the consent of Major League Baseball.
Oh my goodness.
Also, I would be remiss to mention Puzzle Warriors 3, which I'm going to be a guest on this week.
Wow, nice.
That's right. I make my long-awaited return to Puzzle Warriors 3. We're in the midst of anniversary of Marvel Puzzle Quest, and I don't know, you know. I don't know if Ray and Ian and Craig mortgaged their house once, twice, three times, but they came up with the right number to get me to appear on a podcast that isn't this one.
Wow.
Because if you remember from a few months back, Todd, I don't do other shows unless I get paid for it.
That is true.
That's right.
I do jobs for bagels. That's the motto.
That's right. Much like Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes, I don't do jobs for anyone.
Oh, boy.
So, there's a ton of digital sales and freebies. A ton of new freebies, but a ton of sales as well. Marvel is having a sale on pretty much every Iron Man book ever. Boom, Archie, Image, and Oni are doing line-wide sales. Now, those ones you always got to be careful with, because you always have to put in, like, a code at checkout to get those.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Horse is having a sale on their horror books. Obviously, it's Halloween. I could see that sale going till the end of the month. And DC is having a sale on their intercompany crossovers. Well, intercompany, like, properties that they own, like when they did DC versus Masters of the Universe, or Batman versus Planetary, stuff like that. But also your Batman versus Aliens, Batman versus Predator, Batman Ninja Turtles series that they just recently did with IDW is included in this. But also is the DC Looney Tunes one-shots.
Oh, those are good.
And again, these are books that are part of what, they're not officially Rebirth books, but they're books published within the last year, so typically these books do not go on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And these books are on sale, and I will say this, Todd, DC is no fool. These were $4.99 books that are all on sale for $1.99, except for one.
Uh-oh.
The only one that's not $1.99 is the Batman Elmer Fudd book. That's $2.99.
That's because this is one of the greatest books ever made.
Because not only is it one of the greatest books ever made, they know people are going to buy it, and if we can squeeze an extra buck out of them, even on a sale, let's do it.
That's smart business right there.
You ain't kidding, that's smart business, sir. But some of the new freebies that Marvel put up is the first issue of Ultimate Thor, the Avengers Assemble and Avengers Prime, first issues of those miniseries, and the one that I recommend that gets the red letter freebie pick of the week would be the first issue of the Kurt Busiek, George Perez Avengers from the Heroes Return series.
Ah, yes.
A classic book, and again, I'm glad to see that one included here in the sale, because, as mentioned, that's a really good book. I have very fond memories of it, and it's a beautiful book as well. Like, that was, you know, George Perez when George Perez was George Perez. Not to say that he's not George Perez, but it's a beautiful-looking book, too.
Yes, it is.
So, all of these things will be included in the show notes. Todd, let's get into what we read from this past week. And I'll let you start things off here with your Batman White Knight book.
Both written and drawn by Sean Murphy. It's the basic quick premise is Batman and Joker roles are reversed, where, you know, Batman's the good guy, or Batman's the bad guy, Joker's the good guy. And this is the story of how the beginnings of how their roles are reversed. And as we're reading this, it's a flashback to a year ago where Batman is chasing the Joker, and the Batman is using tactics that don't seem quite like him. Like, something's off. He's like, you know, knocking down, like a security guard won't answer him where the Joker is gone. So he knocks him down, and you're like, and even Robin and Batgirl, or Nightwing at this point, are like, something's not right with this. And in the final fight, you find out that the Joker's whole idea is he breaks into this warehouse and he finds this drug, and he said, this drug is what will change me into something normal, and I can save this city the way the Bat has never done, and I'll teach him a lesson. And the Batman goes off the deep end, beats him up, and force feeds him all these pills, which through a series of events changes the Joker into like a genius and a well-adjusted person. And he goes on the attack with Law and everything to, to try and bring down the Bat and get him off for all the crimes that he's done. And it's really interesting. It's really well done. We find out the reason that Batman is off. I've kind of seen this done before as to why the Batman is off. And he's being more violent, but I'm okay with it because of the story we're going to get. I say this is really good, but now that the pieces are in place for them to go their opposite directions, I want to see more of the miniseries. This is a lot of putting the pieces in place, and so the premise isn't in full effect yet, and that's what I want, if that makes any sense.
It does.
But it was good enough that I'm willing to try more issues. Because I know they have to set it up.
And this is just a miniseries, you said, right?
Right. I'm not sure how many issues off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of eight. I'm sorry. I think they added extra issues. This is one of those things that was maybe supposed to be six, and they added two more. So,
well, I think Sean Phillips is like the master of the eight-issue miniseries. I know Punk Rock Jesus was, I think, an eight-issue miniseries.
Nope, I think Punk Rock Jesus was six, to tell you the truth.
Okay. What was the other one that he did?
Well, I was going to say The Wake with Snyder, but that was 10 issues.
Right.
Hey,
He's a weird numbered guy when it comes to miniseries.
Right. Whether it's the actual right amount or more, he does those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So my book that I read that I was most looking forward to coming out from this past week was Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica, a DC Archie crossover, written by Mark Andrako and Paul Dini, with art by Laura Braga. Mm-hmm. So this book is Veronica's father is going to pave over the wetlands in Riverdale and put up a seemingly pro bono college. Place of higher education. But of course, when it comes to the lodges, nothing is what it seems. There's always some sort of, you know, backhanded scheme to it. And of course, it's all about him making money at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, if there are wetlands and plants to be destroyed, word gets back to Poison Ivy. She tries to do things the right way, of course, by pleading before city council. Of course, she has Harley there as her assistant, and that goes as well as one would think. And of course, that fails miserably, so they decide to crash a costume party that they are having at the Lodge's Manor that the rest of the Riverdale kids, and they're, you know, teenagers, but they're kids, get blackmailed into being the help, as the typical plot of an Archie comic goes. This is kind of a mix of the old Archie feel and the Mark Waid Archie feel. Obviously, not exactly the Mark Waid Archie feel. That has a lot more feels and heaviness to it while still being a light comic, with Harley and Ivy thrown into the mix.
Mm. That's cool.
I really enjoyed this. It was fun, even though some of the gags might have been able to be seen a mile down the road. When we got there, it was still enjoyable, like the costume off between Betty and Veronica, and you don't need to be a rocket surgeon or a brain scientist to figure out what costumes they end up wearing come the costume party. But I hate to say this, the weakest part of this was the art. Not to say that the art was bad by any stretch of the imagination, but some of the head shapes were a little off-putting to me.
Okay.
Like, it was just the way that the panels were laid out, I think a lot of the proportion, the way that things were going. A lot of people were made to look like they had much larger foreheads than normal people do.
Sometimes wonky anatomy will throw me off when I'm reading a book.
Right, and that's what a lot of it was. And again, I don't know what the circumstances were. I don't know if the book was rushed or whatever it was. It did not ruin the enjoyment for the book, but it was definitely striking.
Mm-hmm. I was interested because I'm a big Mark Andrako fan.
Yes.
And I wanted to see what you said on the book before I picked it up.
He does a very good, fun, serviceable job. And again, obviously having Paul Dini there as well, I think helps. Who we think gets the Harley and Ivy character and relationship.
mm-hmm.
without being as, you know, and obviously at the end of the day, it's also an Archie comic, so there isn't as heavy as the overtones or innuendo as there typically is in a more recently penned Harley and Ivy book.
Gotcha.
Still highly recommend it, though. If you're looking for something light and fun and one of those crossover team-up sort of deals that you never thought you would see, add this one to the list.
Okay, cool.
So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, whether you wait for them to go on sale and pick them up at your local convention. However it is that you get your books, be forewarned and be forearmed. Know what's coming out, so you have enough money in your Bitcoin account to pick up your books. The two things that Todd and I are doing in the calendar year 2017 is, one, guessing what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd still has a one correct guess lead over me, but also a running tally of how many books we have purchased over that calendar year, broken out by publisher as well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention it last week, but I'm reminding myself again this week. Next year, we're doing dollars spent.
That's right. An omnibuy count.
Right. Well, again, this the way that this works, you know, because so much of it is like what we're most looking forward to coming out, and we kind of skew toward new material so we could discuss it on the show, with next year, we're still going to do that, but everything that's included is going to be whatever you're purchasing.
That way I have a shot. Yay! Right,
and let's say I buy a shirt. You know, mm-hmm. the thing that I'm most looking forward to reading next week isn't the shirt.
It could be.
It could be if there's like something really cool written on the shirt in code or something.
Right. Hey, yes. The guy there said something in code. I know.
Right. He's in the back of a news van.
Mm-hmm.
So I started the show. So let me look at your list. Is the book you're most looking forward to coming out? Obviously, outside of the omnibuy. Dark Knight's Metal number 3?
No, it is not.
Oh,
it is
my
goodness. It is a book that's not on my list, though I checked and just now as you were talking, and I did send it to you. It is Mr. Miracle number 3.
Oh, okay.
That's on you. I just checked my sent email.
Yep. That's on me.
That's there. It's not in the list, though.
Oh, boy.
I know I make some mistakes, but...
Nope, that's on me. I remember seeing Mr. Miracle, and I'll tell you what I did. You know how you had the abbreviations for Hal and the Green Lantern Corps?
Which you have sometimes.
Right, which I have sometimes, but I did a copy and paste gimmick, and I must have forgot that in the copy and paste.
Okay, no problem. Sorry,
no,
I didn't notice it beforehand.
No, that's on me. I take the hit. I'll take the goose egg there.
All right. Is the book you're looking forward to most also Mr. Miracle 3?
No, it's Dark Knight's Metal number 3.
Oh, my goodness. We flopped our flops.
Right. We flipped our flops on the fly.
That's right. Giggity, giggity.
Oh, my goodness. So I did update the site, which I should have waited on,
mm-hmm.
So that people going and checking as they're listening to the show would see that I made a mistake, but now this is just going to make you look like a crazy person.
I am crazy, I am a person.
That is true. You are one of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, someone who is not a crazy person, Todd, as we do our ham-fisted segues, is you got a chance to sit down one-on-one, with a little bit of interruption, with one of the greatest comic creators of all time, arguably. He's in the argument.
He is for me.
And that would be Peter David, writer of such great things from Incredible Hulk to Supergirl to runs on Spider-Man to runs on X-Factor and all things in between. And Todd got a chance to talk with him on the floor of New York Comic Con, and we're going to go over to that interview right now.
Hi, I'm here with writer Peter David, writer of Aquaman, Young Justice, Spider-Man 2099, Fallen Angel. I can go on and on, but he's written just about everything, I think, at one point. One of my favorite writers of all time. And we do a thing on our show where we did, me and my partner Joe have, we call it Todd and Joe Have Issues. And we did your Spider-Man The Commuter issue.
Ah, okay.
Which is where I think I first, learned of you. And that was one of my, that might be my favorite Spider-Man issue of
that
all
was
time.
Very early on in my career, yes.
Right. The typical, like, fish out of water story.
Yes.
How did that come about? Just like to take him out of his element, or
well, I remember exactly how it came about. We had at those days costumed actors portraying the various characters, and there was one guy who frequently portrayed Spider-Man. His name was Scott Leva, and he was always in character. Whenever he was Spider-Man, he was always crouching and leaping around, and you know all that stuff. And one day we had a guy come in who typically did Captain America, but Scott wasn't available and he was subbing in for Spider-Man. And he was walking around like Captain America, but in a Spider-Man costume. And I watched him just walking around and I thought, you know, Spider-Man's costume looks kind of stupid when he's just walking around up and down, like straight up like a regular person. He really does need to be crouching. And then I thought, I wonder what would happen if Spider-Man was in an environment where he couldn't be his typical Spider-Man, where he had to walk around in his costume. He'd probably feel pretty freaking stupid. I wonder where that would happen. And then I thought, yeah, I just toss him off into the wilds of, you know, the suburbs where there's no high buildings to swing from, or crouch on, or any of that stuff. And that was the impetus that made me write The Commuter Coming.
That's fascinating. I love that.
Bird just flew by.
Yeah, there's a low flying bird around here.
Yeah, okay.
Where I really got to know your stuff was on The Hulk, which was a 14-year run-ish. I was off by two. But that's where I really learned, and at least I think, I could be wrong on this now, where a style that you had, it seemed to be, like, if you were going to do a long run, it would be two, maybe 3 years, you'd have your story set up, and then you would change it. It would be like, Gray Hulk is Mr. Fix-It, Gray Hulk on the run, then the merged Green Hulk, and then...
It was more like 3 to 4 years.
Right, I wasn't sure on
but
the...
there was a specific reason for that. In those days, I had access to the sales numbers of my books.
Oh.
Because I had been the Marvel Direct sales manager. So I still had contacts in Marvel. So I was always able to find out how the books were selling. And I tended to notice that after 3 to 4 years, I'd start experiencing sales drops. Whenever sales would start to drop off, I would say, okay, time to come up with a new direction for the Hulk. To come up with a new storyline that's going to have people going, have you heard what just happened in the Hulk? So that was of tremendous benefit, having those sales numbers that I could use to know when it was time to try something new in the Hulk.
Right, and I could tell, especially from your last issue with it, I felt like when you left there was more to do. Like, we could pause if you want.
No, that's fine. All right. You're
going to
give me
our
books to sign? Fine, okay.
Oh, I'm
talking to him, but feel free to give me the books. Okay, go ahead.
But on the last issue where Rick Jones was telling the stories, it was like, you know, like this, and then he went on to do that. It was just brief snippets of, like,
oh,
I felt, yes, what you were going to do.
I actually did that. Those were all the stories that I was planning to tell.
Right.
My intention was to write through to Hulk number 500 and then bow out. I figured 500 was a good place to quit. And I had all these storylines planned. And then when I wound up being fired off the book, I said, well, so much for those stories. But I summarized everything that I was going to do over the succeeding 20-something issues, thank you, in that storyline.
And I even think, if I'm correct, stuff you did, you hinted on like a Hell on Earth storyline, which you followed up in your X-Factor run, if I'm right.
That is correct.
Which brings me to your X Factor run. I'm going to do the past. And, right. We're the king of the segues on this show. It's a joke that we ham-fisted ones anyway.
All right.
But you did the initial run on X Factor, which has that classic the Doc Samson interview, which was a nice because you were the Hulk writer at the time, and it was a nice shocking ending because it almost seemed like it was Xavier on the cover. And you find out, no, it's Doc Samson. Right. So, but I really loved your ongoing, too. I thought that was another one that had two different feels. I love the early noir, like that, like the detective stuff of that. And your take on Madrox, I love the idea, like the way you get, you look at people's powers differently, give them a new take than what you've seen before. And him, the moment where Madrox, the baby, and obviously you know what I'm talking about, where if the listeners, it was Madrox had a dupe in his regular and he slept with Wolfsbane and Monet.
No, not Wolfsbane, Monet. No, he slept with Siren.
Siren, I'm sorry, my mistake. I'm lit. And we weren't sure which one was the dupe, blah, 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 and he ended up having a baby with Siren,
right.
And it turned out to be the dupe who had slept with her.
That's correct.
And when Madrox grabbed the baby to hold it for the first time, he absorbed it.
Yes.
And the baby, and she's like, give me back the baby.
Right. And
he couldn't. To me, that's like one... an emotional ride, and I remember being just gobsmacked by that.
Well, here's the problem. I wasn't going to write that.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually going to have her give birth and do a whole storyline with the baby. However, I was told by Marvel that I couldn't do that because we were going to be doing a whole huge limited, a whole new series about the first child who was born to the mutants, and it couldn't happen in X-Factor. They had the whole storyline planned.
That was after Decimation, right?
Yes, okay. Exactly. So I couldn't have the baby be born. So I racked my brains about what the hell I was going to do about that. And I came up, the idea just sprung into my head during the San Diego Comic-Con. And I tore through the convention looking for Andy Schmidt, my editor, so I could tell him, and I found him, and I ran the concept past him. And Andy said, that sounds seriously messed up. Yeah, okay, let's do that. The funny thing was, the book wound up changing editors like two or three times before I actually got to the story. And I had to tell every freaking editor the story development all over again and get them, each of them, to sign off on it. And every single one said, that's really messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll do that.
Right, great run of X Factor.
Yeah, thank you.
But and like I said about changing up powers and giving new takes on it, it brings me to Aquaman, which was another fantastic run of books where you can't, like, you came up to me anyway, unless it's somewhere else, not going to give credit where credit's due, is he's faster on land because he has the pressure on him underneath the water.
Right.
He could see at night because it's dark under there. He could, gas isn't going to work on him. And
he's not bulletproof, but he's damn close. I mean, here's my take on Aquaman versus, say, Batman. If you took Aquaman and dropped him in the worst part of Gotham City, he'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
He would manage to get back to the docks and leap into the water and swim home. If he encountered trouble, he'd be able to handle it. If you drop Batman with just the clothes on his back into the middle of the Marianas Trench, he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Or for that matter, into shark-infested waters, he's freaking done.
Right.
You know? As long as he doesn't have a communication device, you know, that's it for Batman.
And he did have that bat shark repellent that one time.
Yeah,
that
was
so
in the
that,
movie,
that, all right, no, I'm joking.
Yeah. So my attitude is that Aquaman is essentially Tarzan of the Apes in water instead of the jungle. And considering that 3/4 of this planet is water, that effectively makes him the most powerful non-Kryptonian character in the entire DC universe.
It's a nation. It has the most area on Earth. So that's what I also liked about it, was the way you involved it with like the other nations and all that stuff. It was but not too political. It was the perfect blend to me of what it was.
Well, no, Aquaman, he's just incredibly powerful. I mean,
I really kind of laid the groundwork for that in an early issue where he fought Superboy.
Yes.
Where Aquaman, you know, well, where Superboy said to him, he's not impressed. And a few pages later, Aquaman shows up at Pearl Harbor with several freaking blue whales at his command as he floods Pearl Harbor. And Aquaman is seen shouting from the top of a whale, "Hey, punk, impressed yet?"
Yep.
Right before he freaking floods the place. Mm-hmm. You know, that to my mind, that's Aquaman.
And I'm
screwing this guy.
Exactly. And I remember the scene where he's like, he's underwater saving him and he goes, "You're swimming the wrong way. Follow the bubbles. Yeah. If I didn't help you, you're going to die." And he throws him up to the surface.
Yeah.
And you're like, Aquaman just kicked the hell out of Superboy. You know what I mean? So
absolutely did. So, a wonderful character.
And I think a lot of people who you know, as the book went on, they don't realize where all that came from, as far as I'm concerned. That's why I love the Aquaman.
Oh, thank you. But I was really thrilled when Zack Snyder put up the picture of Jason as Aquaman. What was funny was that the younger fans are all saying, "That's not Aquaman. That doesn't look anything like him." And all the older fans are going, "No, that's Peter David's Aquaman."
Mm-hmm. And, like, how did they let you get away with taking his hand?
I had to sell them on that.
I figured.
I actually had to go into an editorial meeting in Paul Levitz's office and explain the entire long-term plan, which was eventually going to end with him getting a hand in his hand back again. I wasn't able to finish the storyline for idiotic reasons. But, yeah, I had to really sell them on that concept. And I'm really glad I did. I mean, you know, when I was pitching Aquaman to fans, I would say, you know, people would say, "Well, what's going to be happening in Aquaman?" I would say, "Well, Mira's coming back." And people were like, "Oh, yeah, that's nice." And we're doing this, and we're doing that. And everyone would say, "Yeah, okay, that sounds good." And then I would say, "Oh, and his hand's going to be eaten off by piranhas and replaced with a harpoon." And people are going, "What?
Mm-hmm.
Are you out of your mind?" And that reaction was when I knew that I had really come up with a valid story angle, because while people were reacting with polite indifference to the other stuff, the concept that his hand was going to be eaten away by piranhas and replaced with harpoons had people going, "Well, wait a minute, oh my God, that sounds awful, I've totally got to read that."
Mm-hmm.
And they absolutely did.
Sometimes tragedy is more exciting than people being happy for 14 issues in a row.
That's pretty much right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you were, I don't know if you were doing, Supergirl around the time, because I think there was even a crossover.
Yeah. I don't think I crossed over Superman with, I crossed over Supergirl with Aquaman. I don't think I did. I did cross her over with Young Justice.
Okay, but Supergirl was an interesting take because they had gotten rid of the Matrix character, and you made...
No, they hadn't. I got rid of it.
Oh, you... I
basically, when I came on the book, she was still the Matrix. And I thought, I can't write about a character who just happens to be look like Supergirl out of choice. I didn't like that she was a shapeshifter, and that she happened to look like Supergirl, but she could look like Superman, or Crypto, or a shelf of books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want her to be a shapeshifter. And that's where I came up with the idea of bonding her with a human girl, Linda Danvers, so that the only shapeshifting she would be able to do is transform into Linda and back into Supergirl.
Right, and then it was brought in that there was maybe some, like, angels references and stuff like that.
That's correct. I mean, I did that. I mean, people say, "Well, this is incredibly complicated." No, I actually did it to simplify the character. Before I came up with the Earthbound Angel thing, explaining her background was incredibly complicated. Well, she's this being from a vanished pocket universe who's this and happened to be with Lana Lang and all this stuff. And it was incredibly complicated. Now you'd say, "Who's Supergirl? Oh, she's an angel." Okay,
right.
I'm born with that.
And you brought in, like, you know, you had the knack to bring in, like a new version of Comet, and, like, you were able to revitalize the Supergirl mytho, which I totally enjoyed.
Yes.
And that leads me to, which is my favorite thing that you've ever done, is another Angel reference book.
or actually, I want to go back. You brought Supergirl back from pre-Crisis at that time, during the last couple issues.
That's correct. I did. I had to get that signed off on by hired people in editorials.
Right. I thought that was amazing because I thought that had been...
That's Fallen Angel. Go ahead.
Had been done away with and that coming back. And I remember that being big at the time. Like, that was another, like, oh my God kind of moment just before the book ended.
Right.
But that brings us to Fallen Angel, which... I'm an honest guy. I wasn't as big on the DC run. I thought that was still really good. But when you hit IDW, and it was you and I believe J.K. Woodward...
That's correct.
Whose art... work totally with that book. It had like
Absolutely.
A gritty, dark, magical feel to it.
Yeah.
But that book is my favorite thing you've ever done. And I before we get into the book, do you think we'll see any more of that at any time?
I'm in discussion with IDW about that, yes.
Okay. So how did that come about, the Fallen Angel book?
I actually had a specific storyline that I was going to be doing with Linda, and then they canceled the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan DiDio suggested that I create an original series and use my storylines in there. And that it would be published as a new run of books that they were aiming at female audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, that sounds great. And it lasted for 20 issues, which is about, I don't know, like 18, you know, about 16 issues more than any of the other series lasted.
Right.
So I was very pleased about that. I knew we were pretty much screwed from the beginning when I read the reviews and said, I love this book, I'm totally going to buy it when it's in trade paperback. And I knew we were dead.
Well, I bought all the original issues. I got everything. And I actually was like trying to get the omnibuses, everything else. I'm like that kind of collector. But I think amazing stuff.
I was doing a presentation at the Eisner Awards in San Diego. And my daughter, Gwen, who was something like 7 years old at the time, said, I want you to tell them a joke. What do you call a fish with no eyes? So I got up and I said, okay, ladies and gentlemen, I need to tell you a joke because my daughter wants me to. What do you call a fish with no eyes? And nobody laughed. And like a couple of moans. And I said, okay, guys, you don't seem to understand something here. My 7-year-old daughter told me this joke to tell to you. If you think I'm going to go home and tell her that nobody laughed, you are sadly mistaken. So I'm going to repeat the joke, and I'm going to keep repeating it until I get a response that I can bring back to my daughter. Now, what do you call a fish with no eye? And everyone said, what? And I said, I got a standing ovation, laughter, applause, everyone's on their feet. I said, good, now we can move on.
I'm going to tell you my, it's a quick, stupidest joke, but as a kid, it was my favorite joke of all time. It was, why do elephants paint their toenails red? To hide in cherry trees. Did you ever see an elephant in a cherry tree? Hide pretty good, don't they? That cracked me up as a child. Steal that if you want. I don't care.
I'm going to leave it.
Oh, good.
Although, here's my best joke story. My wife and I were watching Robin Williams. And Robin Williams said, in his routine, he says, why is it better that Jesus was crucified than stoned? Because it takes much less time to do this than this.
Right.
And my wife and I looked at each other. And I picked up the phone and I called Harlan Ellison. And I said, Harlan, do you remember that joke that Kathleen told you some months back about why is it better that Jesus was crucified than stoned? And he said, oh yeah, I love that joke because Kathleen usually can't tell jokes, but that was really funny. And I said, did you happen to tell that joke to Robin Williams? And he said, yeah, I did. Robin thought it was hilarious. And I turned to my wife and I said, congratulations, you've written for Robin Williams.
Fantastic.
That's fantastic.
Oh, no.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Show, continue. This is awesome. Thank you very much.
And,
for this will be great.
Yes. Okay. And I'll wrap up with, what are you doing now? What's your current project? Is it Scarlet Spider?
Yeah, I'm writing Ben Reilly, the Scarlet Spider, and having a great time with it. Also, it's just been announced, I'm doing a 6-issue Battlestar Galactica limited series.
Oh, what company?
Dynamite.
Okay.
Now, here's what makes it interesting. For the first time, the 1978 Battlestar Galactica crew is going to come face-to-face with the 1990s Ron Moore crew.
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought you'd like that.
I was a big fan of both, so...
There you go.
So is there anything else that you have that
I think we got it.
And I would like to thank you from me and my partner Joe. Thank you for doing this interview on Longbox Heroes.
Happy to do it.
Wow. Todd, I have to say, bravo on that interview. I know you would tease to me beforehand that you were going to attempt to do this, and I'm going to guess, knowing Todd like I know Todd, that you did not do a lot of preparation for this interview.
I did not do a lot of preparation.
Right. I would assume that a lot of this was right off the top of your head.
It was. Sadly, I know. I mean, now I made a few mistakes because in there was the bit about X-Factor that Madrox had slept with Wolfsbane. And I remembered when he said it that it was Siren and Monet. But you know what I mean? It was the gist I had down. I have read... I honestly believe, and I didn't get to say this in the interview, was I have had a... for most of my life, a Peter David book being pulled for me every week or every month of my life. Like, I've been collecting comics, except for a brief period in there where he was sick and he wasn't producing anything. But otherwise, it's like, yep, there's I was collecting Hulk, Aquaman, Supergirl, X-Factor. The list goes on and on and on. So I did not do much interview prep, but it was fun.
Right, and it was definitely a really good interview, and you got a lot of really cool information in there.
Yeah, we got to trade jokes and everything, so.
I told my kid that joke. Let's just say I might have listened to this interview before I inserted it into the show. You never know what loose cannon Todd Roker is going to say.
Right.
But I told my kid that joke, and he loved it.
The funny thing there, while one of the pauses was happening, where he was telling us the story about the baby Madrox,
mm-hmm.
and how he had to keep pushing it on each new regime, he said, he was like, oh, because at one point we were off mic, and this family came up, and they were like, oh, we're doing a thing, and he was like, oh, what kind of podcast, and I named the podcast, I'm like, we're this, we're that, we're family friendly, and Peter David goes, oh, you're family friendly? He goes, oh, that's good, because I chose my words carefully, because the editors didn't keep saying that's messed up, they said another word before up, and
oh,
I changed
okay.
it. So I was like, we're cool. The guy who edits it is just, he's top notch. He would have got those out of there.
No, that guy quit a long time ago.
That is two guys ago. That was...
Oh, Jim did such a good job back in the day.
I miss Jim.
I miss Jim too. I see him tweet every now and then. I'm glad he's doing well.
He likes something I do every once in a while, and that makes me smile.
So again, thank you to Daniel Kibblesmith and Peter David for taking time out of their busy convention schedule to sit down and talk with us. And again, folks, you can only hear fantastic interviews like this because you click through our Amazon click-through on longboxheroes.com and you purchase a variety of fantastic things that puts a couple extra shekels in both Todd and I's pockets, and it makes us feel good about ourselves. Such as the folks who purchased the Optimus Prime number 10 comic and the ROM vs. Transformers Shining Armor comics.
Ooh.
Someone also purchased the Children Who Chase Lost Voices Blu-ray. And I don't even know what this movie is, but I'm very much out of touch with most movies today.
That's right. You're just getting around to here to eternity.
Right. I just saw Wizard of Oz for the first time the other day.
That had both color film and black and white.
Right.
Spoiler.
And someone also purchased a Star Wars The Black Series Legends Janaya Solo action figure.
Wow.
Now, unless I'm mistaken, Todd, that's something from the, as they call it, EU, the Expanded Universe, which
Ew?
Doesn't exist anymore.
Ew? No, wait. Either.
That's what Disney said when they had to deal with all that backstory.
Except for Thrawn. They kept him.
For now.
Oh, no, he's getting a sequel to a book. They mentioned that at New York Comic Con.
Oh, they're still talking about it as though it's a real thing, huh?
Yeah, that they had that Thrawn book of 2 years ago, whatever, and now there's going to be a sequel to that book. So.
Right. So I know Todd, and again, thank you to everyone who purchased anything through our Amazon click-through over at longboxheroes.com. Todd, I know there was a ton of Todd's art attacks, but you had tweeted out a picture of a low-key Lego keychain.
And yes.
You said there was some story behind it. I almost forgot. I knew there was one of the New York Comic Con thing I wanted to mention to you.
Yes. Basically, me and Josh. Hi, Josh.
Josh, who was the co-star of our Inhumans After Dark episode.
Yes, him. Me and him were wandering around. We were getting sketches together, which I'll discuss in a minute. And while we were going to go to one of the places that we were getting a sketch, we walked along and we saw that there was a Marvel Lego game. I'm not sure which one, what version of it, but they had a print, which was like Lego Black Panther with Lego Ant-Man and Wasp. I think somebody else on there. And he really wanted it. And you had to play the video game to get it. Like, you had to stand in line and play the video game. And I don't know if you have to give your email or whatever. I'm not 100% sure. But the other thing that they gave you was a Loki keychain, right? So I was looking at where stand there, and there was this how do I want to put this? There was a woman who was pleasurable to my optics, if you know what I mean.
All right.
A very beautiful woman there, and she was holding the keychain. There was this big white bald dude who was like the bouncer kind of guy. He's like, you have to get in line over here. And I'm like, oh, you get the print? I'm like, I'm not interested in the print. And she's like, oh, you get the keychain too? And I'm like, oh, hold on, can I see the keychain? She like held it up. I said, oh, like it was like swinging. And he said, can I hold it for 1 second just so I can look at it? My eyes are shot as I'm getting older. And she's like, fine. So I held it up. I'm like, oh, it's a Loki keychain. I gave it back to her. And she's like, very nice. I said, now that I would like, but, I can't really wait in line. Josh's like, I need that keychain for Alyssa, and I need the print for myself, so I'm waiting. And I'm like, well, you know what? I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase before, Joe, but I was like, you do you, brother. You do what you got to do. I don't mind. I got to get stupid Marvel reward points for somebody.
Right.
So this was at the where I was looking for the other booths, and I'm like, I'll have to go. And he's like, well, I'm waiting. You know, you should be waiting for this keychain too, kind of a thing. And he gets in line. They open the rope for him and he gets in. And the girl just looks at me and goes, here, Josh isn't looking. She just hands it to me. She just goes. She's like, you getting those for your friend? I said, yeah, like, that's why I'm not staying here. And she's like, well, here, just take the keychain, right? So the guy bursts out laughing that she just handed me the keychain, and Josh is like, what? What's going on? And the guy goes, like, I'm like, nothing, Josh. You wait in line. You get your keychain. I already have it in my pocket. And the guy's just laughing. He is laughing hysterically. And so I went off, and now Josh texts me that the sketches that we want are being done at the booth next door, that the artists are ready, so I come running back. And he's like, what happened? He's like, they gave you that keychain, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, so not only did I get the pin that you said you could have and I couldn't have, I also got the Loki keychain. I was like, and I told her the story. She just handed it to me because I was being nice to get something for you. So he's like, you know what? Sometimes you know, so I just found that amusing. I thought that was a funny little story. But that leads me into, because then we went over to the Marvel booth, which they were having three people do sketches, and I was getting sketches for my sketchbook, and I got all three people for the sketches. But the first one, and this is this week's story, is it was Phil Noto. And I'm a big fan. I've talked about it before. I'm a big fan of his run on Black Widow and anything else. I love his art. He is legitimately one of my dream sketches. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get the Phil Noto sketch. And me and Josh got in line and we got there, and I'm like talking to Phil Noto, and I'm like, oh, I love this character. I love the way you did it. Edmonton was the writer. I was all over the book. And Josh was like, yeah, I have to admit, he got me on the book, and I think he threw a little bit extra into it. Like, he did the little Black Widow symbol and everything because, like, he thought, like, he was like, oh, this guy got this other guy to get the book and everything. And it was really nice to finally get a Phil Noto sketch and of the character that I always wanted.
Right. Now, you also said that this was going to be a tale that was told in three parts.
Yes, it's going to be the three artists that I talk to. I'm not going to mention who two and three are. You'll see if you follow Todd's Art Attack.
Oh, boy.
I have to admit, the story dips in quality in the middle, but closes strong, if that you know, teases to keep you around. The third artist is my favorite of the three stories.
Let me look to see if there's anyone on the Artist Alley list with the initials KM. Hang on. Now, I will say from the Todd's Art Attack, of course, our friend Josh, aforementioned Josh, got a Harley Quinn done by Chad Harden. The aforementioned Andy Hedder from earlier in the show got a She-Hulk and a Harley Quinn done by Scott Blair. And listener, ultra mega mass listener of the show, Jesse DeJong, did his own Professor X sketch. Mm-hmm. And I had to share that with a couple people for a little bit of an inside rib with that one, because they got such a kick out of that one, especially since it's Professor X, and he's saying, to me, my long box heroes, as opposed to his X-Men, or opposed to his all-new X-Men.
And my favorite part about it was he had a bad paw while he did it. That looks pretty good.
Right. No, he had a thumb. I don't know if he's part dog, Todd.
You always say, listen, I call your bad leg a bad wheel, and if you have anything bad on your hand, it's a bad paw.
A bum so wheel. I have a bum wheel.
Bum wheel, bad paw. Deal with it, Joe.
Right. Of course, also to mention before we close out the show with Todd and Joe Have Issues, it's a busy show, kind of all over the place a little bit. The Pigskin Pick'ems were about a third of the way through the season, and you said you have information of the reveal about the person who's in first place.
Yes, I do.
See, while I may not have remembered the news from New York Comic Con, the crucial directly related to the show stuff.
Right. So I threw that out last week that it was like if somebody, I thought it was somebody playing shenanigans, because there's a way that you could do multiple entries and then do different picks.
Sure.
And I forgot, like, if you're like, okay, my one entry, I'm going to pick these teams. And then this entry, I'm going to pick these teams. And whichever one is doing better, I could swap out for in the thing. And I forgot to lock it. And I thought that's what somebody was doing. And I was very angry and blah, blah, blah. I was way angrier than I should have been. And I got this, I won't say the person who did it, but he said online, so I'm fine with it. But in my DMs on Twitter, it's like, hey, Todd, the Pigskin Pick'ems things is my fault. It was my brother-in-law who saw my nephew and I, who love the shop and Longbox Heroes, and they do. I know for a fact the gentleman has a Longbox Patooey sticker
on his
phone. So he saw us making our picks and asked to join. He was from another league and they carried over and blah blah blah. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. It's somebody who's like the more the merrier.
Right.
That's what I say.
At least the you know at like two people removed who this is.
Right. It wasn't somebody who just went along the lines, hey, there's a league that my picks are better than. If I slide in, I could win. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Now,
which a lot just for bragging rights. And right. Now it's like some, and I'm 100% fine. If he wins, he gets the prize. Whatever we decide, you know, if there's going to be a prize, but it's better knowing that it is someone tangentially who listens to the show, not some unknown schmo just trying to be like, hey, I won this league over here. You know what I mean?
Right. Now we need to figure out who Hazard Hicks is.
I have no idea who that is, because they're leading now.
Right. Now they're on blast.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least they were there from the beginning, and now I've locked the group, so no one can enter or leave. You can't switch out. You can't switch, which is what I forgot to do on the first week. You know what I mean? So
right. So partially this is your fault.
No, I'm going to show mostly my fault.
Right. So one other thing that I want to mention here as well before we wrap things up. On October 22nd, Powerbomb TV. We had Adam of Powerbomb TV on the show to promote their last event they did back in June, Break the Barrier. And Jerry, spelled G-H-E-R-I, has been on the show before to discuss a variety of things. But this is their second independent show that they're doing called Futures. You could get it. You can come see it live if you're in the greater northeastern Pennsylvania area. It's Sunday afternoon at 3:30. Tickets start at like $15, and there's going to be a meet and greet, you know, get your picture taken sort of thing, with Sean Waltman, the former 123 Kid, Six, X-Pac, you know, all those sort of things. You know, everybody knows who X-Pac is, right?
Was he John Boy too?
No, Walton? He was not John Boy. He was whoever Lauren Green played.
Oh, because he was Sam Walton. Right?
Oh, okay. But if you can't be there live, of course, you could watch the show live as it streams and hear my beautiful voice in cool. your home through powerbomb.tv. And I know a lot of people, you know, subscription services and so forth, but you can get a 20-day free trial with the promo code WordsBig80s. So if you've never subscribed to Powerbomb TV before and you want to check out this independent wrestling show, kind of, you know, it's called Futures because this is the futures of where a lot of professional wrestling comes from. A lot of the big names currently in World Wrestling Entertainment would have been 5, 10, even 15 years ago, kind of got their start on the indies. And to kind of be ahead of the curve sort of thing, see some really good independent wrestling. And like I said, whether it be live for $15 on the ticket or free with that promo code over the next 20 days, I'd be remiss not to mention. They don't give me a promo code. I have to use someone else's.
I thought they gave you a code. Whatever. Anyway.
Right. Last but not least here, Todd, of course, is Todd and Joe Have Issues. Talking Gotham Central number 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a problem with this book, Todd.
Is it too good?
So, Todd, I'm getting caught up on books.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading books now that have ads for Wonder Woman coming soon in them.
Wow.
And that's how far behind I was on some books.
Woof.
And even further still, hey, Todd, did you know there's a second season of Outcast?
Yes, I heard rumors.
So anyway, so I'm getting caught up on books, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for the show, I have to read something like Gotham Central, a series. This entire run of Gotham Central, I have probably read cover to cover 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read this issue, and I'm like, maybe I should read this again.
You didn't, did you?
No, I don't have that sort of time in my life, Todd. I wish I did.
You'd be watching documentaries if you did.
Right. Oh, man. So this book is great. I love it. Now, granted, it was a little loosey-goosey playing with the kind of horror theme. I just wanted to get this book in there because we haven't talked about a Gotham Central book. But it's Christmas time. The police department is having strife because they're fighting with the mayor's office. He wants to cut overtime. And while the police commissioner is arguing with the mayor gets shot. And then within the course of a day, 2 more people get shot. Someone on the school board and a paramedic person. So now it's an epidemic. They find a clue of who it is. So now in a completely separate story, which would be a great another Todd and Joe Have Issues somewhere down the line, the story about the, I don't know if she's a secretary or whatever her job in the precinct is, that young lady, Stacy, whose duty it is to be the one to turn the bat signal on and off.
Right, because she's a temp.
Right. And don't want to give too much about that away because I can see us doing that as a future Todd and Joe Have Issues.
You know what? That gives me an idea.
All right. You write that down, too, next to top 10, huh?
Right. I just wrote Stacy.
Okay.
But go ahead. Sorry.
So I love this book. It's great. I want to read the entire run from beginning to end right now.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? Did you like it?
Yes, I did. This is something that I read a long time ago. So it was, I was familiar with the characters, but not as fresh in my mind as some of the other books that I read. But I forgot, first of all, how beautiful it looks with Lark's art. Like, he does, like, a crime procedural just beautifully. It works so well along with Ruckus storytelling. Just like a gritty kind of look of Gotham, very realistic, which makes it feel like grounded and down to earth. And then as the story goes on, the whole, like, as the first shooting happens, it's just like, all right, it's not a typical case, but it's a case at least. But now as it escalates and there's more shootings, it becomes a clock ticking to figure it out so more people don't die. And as it goes on, the intensity just keeps amping up and amping up and amping up and amping up. And then they're like, well, it's coming from there. And they go in and it's led to believe that it's the Joker. And, you know, like, and the, you're just like, maybe it isn't, maybe it is. But if you haven't read it, you immediately you want the next issues to find out what's behind this crime. How are the murders linked? Is it random? What's going on? And the mystery and the intensity are like at an 11 in on the intensity meter. Makes me want to go back and read more Gotham Central.
Absolutely, and that's which. The great thing that a book like this, a number one, should be able to do.
Which I don't remember if I finished the whole book. Do you know what I mean? Because that was something that I was getting later because I missed the train and wasn't buying it in single issues. Somebody was lending me the issues or the hardcovers or trades or something like that.
Gotcha.
And I want to remember if this is one of those books, too, that was traded the wrong way for a while. Do you know what I mean?
Hmm.
That it had... That
well,
it
Todd,
had...
you talk about DC messing up trades, and it sends up my signal.
Where I think it was like, oh, well, they had these little minis... Not minis, but they had these storylines, and then they may have a one-shot in there, and they didn't like tacking the one-shots, so they did... Like a one-shot story in the entire run, whether they attacked them all together in one trade paperback. And that's why a lot of people weren't buying the trade the way it was, and I was borrowing the hardcover.
Yes, okay, so.
See, I have a good memory sometimes.
They did, so they the first run was 5 trades, right?
Mm-hmm.
First trade was 1-5. Second trade was 6-10 with bonus material from an issue of Batman Chronicles and an issue of Detective Comics.
Which was probably Rucka at some point tying in.
Right. So then the third trade is where things fall off. So the third trade, we skip issue 11.
Right.
We skip issues 16, 17, and 18.
Ugh.
Right. So trade 4, we skip issues 26 and 27.
Wow.
And then trade 5 is the rest of the run.
Now, does it have any of those in there mixed back
in?
No. Why would I even buy those trades?
So then they do a new printing of everything is the hardcovers.
Right, which now that's what I think someone was lending me.
And that's where they get them correctly. It's like 1 to 10, 11 to 21, 22 to 31, and you know, so forth.
Right, with the supplemental material in there too.
Right. But yeah, the trade is just straight up missing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 issues of the run.
Well, what is it with Fantastic award-winning books and DC didn't trade them in the right way? Starman, this. Oh.
Let me look.
Manhunter. Wasn't there a book that you were mad that they never finished collecting the trades?
Oh, there's so many of them.
I know. That's me throwing it out there. We could have another 2-hour podcast.
Oh, so, okay. And then one of the issues that they skip, that issue 11, is the Stacy issue.
Ugh. How could... all right. Now I'm Joe hot at that.
Right. And the 16, 17, 18 is like a complete story... Where, you know, it's a murder investigation is passed between 3 different sets of detectives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not getting too far into that one. And then the 26 and 27 is... Like, it's, you know, it's a Josie Max Slam Bradley, but it's still by Brubaker. You know, there's no rhyme or reason as to why that one wasn't included.
Oh, did I say Rucka before did these?
It was Rucka and Brubaker.
Okay, that's why I was like, I thought so. I was
right,
like,
because it was like, they would co-write, and then it would be like, they would flip-flop.
Okay, my mistake.
It was
then,
like,
but...
co-write, Brubaker, Rucka, Brubaker, co-write. Brubaker, Rucka, Brubaker, Rucka, and then the last story arc they co-wrote.
All I could see is Fozzie Bear when you were doing that.
Right.
Rucka. Ugh. What?
So, I think that's everything except for what next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues is going to be.
That's right. And because it's the month of October, I'm going to go with Ghost Rider Volume 2, Number 68, a retelling of the Ghost Rider's origin with some supplemental stuff around it. Which I thoroughly loved. It was an issue that I loved. And I still, to this day, I think we've talked about it on this show many times. It is what the first Ghost Rider movie should have been.
Not Nick Cage jumping goalpost to goalpost on a football field?
With Ava Menendez looking fantastic.
The third Menendez brother.
Oh. They did a Law and Order... realistic movie.
Gung, oh, yeah, gung. No, I heard all the ads for it, yes.
Yes, you gotta have the gung.
just to close it out, since it came up, because they were advertising it on Corolla's podcast.
Right.
He would talk about it, and he goes, I know, and you should know, you failed as a parent. If you have two children, and one says to the other, hey, I'm thinking about killing mom and dad tonight. You in? Mm-hmm. And the other kid says yes. Then you failed as a parent.
What?
At least one of the kids should be like, I'm calling the cops.
I don't know. I think it's, you've taught your kids to work together.
Yes.
To set out on their own, which is what every parent wants, to see their kids succeed. No?
Maybe.
Okay.
All right, so Ghost Rider next week. Ooh.
Yeah. He's an actual Ghost Rider, not a Ghost Driver.
Hey, Driver. Ghost Driver.
He's on a motorcycle, not in a car.
All right. So I think that's everything for real now.
It is. Next week we'll have Flash and Legends of Tomorrow talk.
That's right, Flash and Legends of Tomorrow back. I know there's tons and tons of new shows, everything from Gifted to Inhumans, all sorts of stuff. And I know we don't really talk too much about the news for TV, mm-hmm. but I know it's in development. Spike TV is rebranding themselves again.
Right.
They're going to be the Paramount Network, and the show that is going to be their launch TV show is the adaptation of Velvet.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe he'll finish that book at some point.
Well, it's been 10 months since the last issue, Todd.
It's been more than 10 months.
And again...
It has got to be more than 10 months.
When we talk, Todd, when you and I talk, it could be more, but let me look.
That, and I'm really surprised the Paramount show they didn't push first would be Star Trek Discovery. But they're pushing their stupid, like, CBS version of Hulu with that, which is ridiculous.
Okay. The Last Trade came out in December. That, because I knew December was in there for something.
Right.
The Last Trade came out in December. The last single issue came out in July of last year.
That's over a year ago.
Over a year, yes.
Woo.
But, yeah, and again, a lot of times it's like, Gifted, it's on the bubble, who knows. If and when Velvet comes up, that's definitely going to get talked about on the show.
That is. And I'm actually, I know you don't watch it, and we don't, so we don't talk about it on the show. I am super pumped for Riverdale Season 2.
Mm.
I love the first season of Riverdale.
All right.
It was Twin Peaks done right.
Wow, put that on the DVD box if they make DVDs still.
Yes, they do.
All right. I think for real that closes everything out.
I think so, too.
All right. So for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 367 of Longbox Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop! So here we are. It is week 6 of the football picks.
Yes!
We only got 5 right last week, which kind of stinks, but that's okay.
Yeah, that sucks.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's get into it. Who do you think is going to win? The Eagles or the Panthers?
Eagles!
Who do you think is going to win? The Falcons or the Dolphins?
Dolphins!
How about the Bears or the Ravens?
Ravens.
The Browns or the Texans?
Texas.
The Lions or the Saints?
Saints!
The Packers or the Vikings?
Packers.
The Patriots or the Jets?
Patriots!
The 49ers or the Redskins?
49ers.
The Rams or the Jaguars?
Jaguars.
The Buccaneers or the Cardinals?
Cardinals.
The Steelers or the Chiefs?
Police! The Chiefs.
The Chiefs, okay.
Yeah, it sounds like police.
It rhymes with police?
That's yeah. Ha, ha, ha.
The Chargers police. Or the Raiders?
All right, you!
Is that the Raiders?
Yeah.
Okay. The Giants or the Broncos?
Giants.
And last but not least, the Colts or the Titans?
Titans.
Okay. Now last but not least. Now this comes out tomorrow. This comes out on Wednesday.
I love you!
This comes out on Wednesday, which is the 11th.
That's your one.
Hang on. So what's going on the 12th?
My birthday.
And how old are you going to be?
6.
6. Awesome. I'm excited for your birthday.
I'm talking through the butt of the microphone.
I don't. It's only picking up a little bit, did you see?
I'm talking through the butt of the microphone.
Now may All I right. See Thanks your... for listening, everybody.
Now may I see your phone.